南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Hello everyone, friends, thanks for being here. Happy 1st of December. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. I hope you're healthy and safe. Today I'm going to go on talking about, what the heck, let's keep on going with Perfection of Wisdom. Just to let you know, those of you who are familiar with my books, some of you may have purchased over the last couple of years, Beyond Zen. I published that. That was a collection of writings and ideas about Nichiren doctrine and Buddhism of the Lotus Sutra. But I had other things in there inspired by Nichiren's writings and also inspired by my extensive martial arts background. So there's lessons in the back on breathing and so forth. And I recently spent quite a lot of time rereading every word of the book and adjusting it. Some of those old writings had vestiges of old vernacular and even incorrect pronunciations of things, not least of which is the Daimoku. So, because it still says Beyond Zen in here in one of the chapters about Zen. So I didn't change the book so much as I revised the language and, you know, over the years you learn how to explain things more clearly unless I do have a tendency to run off with the mouth. And in the past, I don't know how much better it is now, but in the past I tend to wander and get right back around to what I initially started, and sometimes that confuses people. One of the notable differences is the TLK Quantum Life Gohonzon, or Mandala of Gohonzon, which is now the correct mandala. Not that it was incorrect before, but it only had originally the Daimoku, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Now the whole thing is there. So even if you are in dire straits financially and you can't get hold of a clear, correct Gohonzon by Nichiren's hand, not some other totalitarian or authoritarian person, there is one you could use right there. Just take it out of the book itself. Anyway, it's now retitled because it is quite an extensive revision. I've retired Beyond Zen, and now it is the Nichiren Independent Doctrine of Lotus Sutra Buddhism. A much more correct and fitting term, I think, for what we're all doing. Nichiren is our teacher, and we practice the Buddhism of Shakyamuni, whose culminating teaching is the Lotus Sutra. So we practice Lotus Sutra Buddhism from the doctrine of Nichiren as our current, our era, our epoch, our teacher, our contemporaneous teacher, and we do so independently. We don't need to have club organization affiliation or a stamp of approval by any organization. Our stamp of approval comes from ourselves, from our practice, from our enlightenment, from our Buddhahood, which Shakyamuni showed us how to achieve, and Nichiren specifically told us how to use that teaching of Shakyamuni's for this latter age, this day that we are living in. So it's all there. Anyway, just a brief note about that. You know, I've also done quite a revision on Big Book of Buddhism. Maybe not as granular, but it's been extensively edited, re-edited, and revised as well. So just trying to keep up with the library. I'm just a one guy, so you know, sometimes it's hard to get to everything. I realize I have lots more work to do, but that's okay. Anyway, thank you for being here. I think we finished the first chapter, which again makes the point quite strongly that to pursue the wife, the life of a bodhisattva is to really, really hunker down and dedicate oneself to, and again, this is 2,300 years old, right? Not this translation, but the perfection of wisdom teachings. So this was the early stages of Mahayana scholarship. And Mahayana is much to do with scholarship and how to instantiate these teachings of Shakyamuni. So the first steps obviously are very critical and, how shall I say it? They're very involved because at this point, humanity, the students of this day, are still trying to grapple with how the mind perceives and affects and is influenced by samsara. We're all samsaric beings. We are all samsaric in the sense that this samsara is the filters through which we experience the life process of all phenomena, not just us. That's big in itself to understand. So lots of teachings, sutras about that, right? But when we finally get down to it, when students begin to really understand that it is their mind that is experiencing what they've always thought of as physical life, and that it can be trained, that's a biggie. Now the training takes place on the next level, that once you realize all that, that's very important. That's well and good. You've reached, it's like in martial arts, when you reach a black belt, you get a black belt. That doesn't mean you're a master. That means that you now have enough knowledge, enough skill to begin to learn what the martial arts are about, how it works, how it integrates body and mind. So in much the same way as earlier teachings, when we transition to Mahayana, there's a shift with mental awareness. Okay, how do I live this out? Now that I understand emptiness and I understand the teachings are completed. And you know, even in this time period of the perfection of wisdom, 100 years later or so, comes Nagarjuna, who really nails down emptiness. Right? So it's still an ongoing, in fact, all the way up to the Lotus Sutra, still an ongoing embroilment with this process of life and grasping and grappling with it. You understand? So here we're talking about the Bodhisattva's mental attributes or her goal in how to live a samsaric life with the one goal of Buddhahood, of how to have the Buddha clarity, the Buddha mind, the Buddha-ness, the perception of a Buddha, which is the goal of Buddhism, and how to live as a human in samsara with this samsaric human mind and grapple with the duality of that, the dual perceptive. You could argue that the perception of Buddha, Buddha-ness, Buddha-hood, Buddha-nature, all of that is a non-duality. And yet it still maintains a duality because it never escapes samsara entirely. I'll get notes on that. Nirvana is about a liberation from all that is stressful and creates anxiety and the overall umbrella term suffering is not one I'm particularly comfortable with, but this is what we read everywhere, right? It's really about this discontent, this malaise which is caused by, endemic of, our samsara-ness, that desire to be, and the desire to be is an instantiation of wanting to remain. Everything arises and then endures and decays and expires, right? Everything. But samsara, though, is built of energy to be, to become, to instantiate. And the moment you instantiate, from that moment on, that energy, that momentum, that kinetics of wanting to be shifts into a maintaining being. And this is why it's endurance. The decay isn't as easily perceived. It takes a while, right? It takes a while before the chair that you know degrades into compost. It takes a long time. But believe me, the whole time the chair is in your presence, it is slowly decaying. And that decay, although it's gradual endurance, it does take a dive at some point. It really starts to decay more and more quickly. So do we humans. It's the nature of all phenomena. It's the nature of planets, asteroids, stars, gases. It's just the nature of all phenomena. But we have this samsaric engine in us that says, no, hang on, this is mine, that's not mine, that's yours, this is mine, this is me, this is I. I'm constructed of all these things that I'm hanging on to. From that, we suffer, because it's an unreal attachment. It's an untrue existence. It's a manufactured perception. But it is all-consuming. It is the perception of samsara, of which we're born, instantiated, manifest, that mental state. And to arrive to Buddha, to our Buddha-ness, which is inculcated into everything that is manifest, is simply the knowledge that it's all temporary, that it's all... If you could witness things as temporary, like watching a news program on TV and seeing something very exciting or scary or destructive, whatever. Watching fires or floods, watching births, watching races, sports, anything. You don't question when you watch those things on TV. In fact, you sense an emotional response of relief when you see something happening other than to yourself, that yourself is not there. You empathize. That's how powerful the samsaric mind is. You sympathize with the scoring of a touchdown, or the annihilation of the other team, or the flooding in Indonesia. You feel so sad and so, right? Because you sympathize because of the challenge of permanence, because of our attachment to stasis, to don't move, don't mess anything up. I like things the way they are, right? The cliche, everyone resists change, when in fact, everything is constantly changing. How ridiculous is that mindset, right? So Buddhism has been trying to pry loose that attachment since its very start. That was, in a sense, Shakyamuni's enlightenment. Oh, if we just stopped doing that, we could live freely. His enlightenment wasn't that we could leave samsara physically. It was that we could exist in samsara physically without mentally being attached to it. Liberated from it. Not extinguish it. Not immolate yourself. Not sacrifice your life. live your life, but live it to its fullest by recognizing that everything is just a moment of experience. Now, intellectually, that might start to make sense to you and I. But it's really hard to twist that melon into thinking, how would my day be if I could be like that all the time? And just in making that statement, you're already wrestling with beingness, permanence. Are we? In fact, you may be suffering about getting to Buddha. How does that make sense, right? This is another reason why you might use the word awakening. Not because it's a process so much as it is one of those moments of, oh, I'm there. See, working towards something is samsaric. Because to make effort towards something is to acknowledge that there is something preventing you from achieving it. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying understand the perspective shift at work here. And all of this, I will remind you once again, this is about the training to understand this major shift. And the bodhisattva life is about living in samsara while at the same time experiencing that life through this new lens, this Buddha lens, this liberated lens. That is nirvana. Nirvana is not death and going released from this physical realm. You can release yourself from this physical realm right now. That is Buddhahood. Perfect enlightenment in this here and now, in this form. That is the revolution of Shakyamuni's thinking, and it culminates very explicitly in the Lotus Sutra. And this is what Nichiren spent his life trying to get Japan, and by extension all of us, to get this, to understand that these earlier practices are all well and good. Gymnastics are great, push-ups are great. Jogging is great, you know, getting your blood, blah, 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 and all this, you know, all the technology around physical being. It's all well and good. But ultimately, this is the goal. You can do all of that, but understand that it is in service to this ultimate practice. And when you sit in front of your mandala of Gohanzon and you train your focus on the mandala to awaken your inner Gohanzon, and you chant out loud and you stare and you listen and you feel, all your consciousnesses are coming together and you will experience Buddhahood. How long you maintain that experience as you then re-enter samsara with this clearer, more detached mind, that's a matter of, what's the word? Practice. Why is it practice? Because it takes repetition and training the mind to exist in that place for you to hold on to it, carry it into your daily life. And any one of you who've practiced for any number of months or years, you know that the moment you turn away from the butsudan and you do your thing with chanting, closing it, turn off the light, you're already slipping back into, that's my light switch. Got to turn that off, got to remember to do this, got to take care of that, got to put this down, got to put out the candles. You're already dealing with your interaction of attachments. Can you do those things? without those attachments, that's the first realization of holding on to that mindset. And the more you turn back into samsara, the more all of the monkeys start hearing them. Yeah, I'm over here, I'm over there. You need to chew this. It's time you shaved. It's time you vacuumed the floor. It's time. You're in samsara. You're in possession land. You are in the land of stress and anxiety. Why are you stressing? Right? So, perfection of wisdom is about perfecting that clarity and carrying it into daily life. And that is the first challenge of the bodhisattva. And as the bodhisattva becomes more and more able, more and more living within samsara with Buddha mind, to the extent that she or he can do it, influences tremendously everything around them. Without saying a word. So we all want to get to that point. So reading these earlier sutras are clues, number one, on what in our thinking might be our obstacles. Because we're coming at this from Myōden Gekyo, not from never having understood how to instantiate it. So we have a unique perspective on these older teachings. And some of these might trip some ideas in our minds that, oh gosh, I've always done that. I've never realized I've done it. Now, you know, recognizing it is half the game of throwing it out, right? You have to know what your obstacles are. Maybe you don't have to know them, but knowing them opens up all kinds of doors of perception for you, right? Wouldn't you agree? So that's why we study, to open these doors so that as we turn away from our daimoku, our gangyo, and re-enter samsara, we see it coming. We go, oh, nice monkey. Oh, look, there's those monkeys again. Right? Unattached. Observing. Could you imagine? All the same monkeys, but just observing them outside of your influence. Look at them go. Oh, it's amazing. That's the kind of life we want to lead. That is the Buddha way. That is the bodhisattva way with the Buddha mind. A bodhisattva is simply a samsaric Buddha. Buddha is a perceptive, a mental condition that takes all our samsaric tendencies and separates them from our samsaric condition, bodhisattva. Do you see? All right, chapter 2. He does not stand in form, perception, or in feeling, in will or consciousness, in any skanda whatsoever. In Dharma's true nature alone, he is standing. Then that is his practice of wisdom, the highest perfection. Do you hear that differently now? Given what I've just explained over the last 20 minutes? Well, 15 minutes. I spent too much time talking about the books. Right? He does not stand in form, perception, or feeling. In other words, quite simply, if you're detached from the samsaric instantiation, desire to be, to want, to possess, then the fact that you are upright and standing isn't about the fact that you are upright and standing. It is simply a vantage point from which to experience and see and hear and smell and feel the ground beneath you. It's not the aches in your ankles or knees or the size of your butt. It's not in that form, which, conscious or unconscious, is always there in samsara, ready to make you suffer in some way, make you stress, make you anxious about. When you're in your Buddhahood mind, that this is just a vehicle. This is just your way of moving your Buddha mind around. Detached, you see? Not annihilation, just detached. Big, big, big difference. If you want to learn about annihilation, study world religions. They're all cults of death and dying, and this life is worthless or only worth by atonement or suffering. I mean, that's what they want. Buddhism, no. That's exactly what's creating your suffering. Duh. But don't burn it. Don't assassinate it. Don't lay it on a cross. Don't immolate yourself. This is your vehicle for ultimate enlightenment. All of it's good, but put it in the right place. Make it service your mind of enlightenment. Stop carrying it around. That's why you suffer. That's why you stress. That's what makes you anxious. Change and no change, suffering and ease, the self and not self, the lovely and repulsive, just one suchness in this emptiness they are. Just one suchness in this emptiness they are. What does emptiness here mean? I wish you were all sitting around so we could talk about this amongst ourselves. It would be lovely. One day, maybe. I hope. And maybe at some point, I'll get this hooked up so that we can do this kind of thing live. So we can, in some form, discuss, right? Just one suchness. That word, suchness. That's so descriptive and at the same time, elusive, isn't it? But that's what we're talking about. Remember I was saying, yeah, the monkeys are still there. They're just nice monkeys. They're suchnesses. When I put my hand in water, it gets wet. There's a suchness of water. There's a suchness of moisture. There's a suchness of wetness. And with this skin, body, muscles, skeletal, whatever, the whole combination, and the feeling consciousness, I can experience wetness. Isn't that amazing? I'm not stressing about wetness. I'm not anxious about getting wet. I'm simply experiencing wetness. Can you move through life that way? Okay. So let's read these two together. And I didn't finish the second one. And so he takes not the stand on the fruit which he won, which is threefold, that of the arhat, a single Buddha, a Buddha fully enlightened. Now again, arhat's being used as somebody who's attained the knowledge of a black belt. But he hasn't learned yet what it is to live in samsara with that knowledge to maintain the Buddha enlightenment, a bodhisattva. So these terms, remember, this is from 100 BC to 100 AD, that time period. We're talking 2300 years ago. So the teaching was still being written down that Shakyamuni had orated and passed through oral dissemination, whatever word I was looking for, I lost it, but this was an oral teaching from 500-600 years, there's arguments maybe even 700 years before the Christian went out on the calendar, evidently, the birth of Christ, right? So 600 BC, before Christ. I don't know how we would replace the current calendar, but it's pretty auspicious that a religion won out. But anyway, it's how we mark time. We mark time. Earthbound, make it permanent. This is a Friday. It cannot be anything else. I will be liberated Friday. Oh, here comes Monday. Yeah, I mean, it's all identification, hanging on to, possession, right? Those are the things that create stress and anxiety. It says Buddhism is every single moment of the day. Being, and now this is being mindful. If all moments of the day you were reminding yourself, actually the goal is not to have to remind yourself, but on your way there, realize, it would make you laugh at some point. At some point you'd realize the farce of being obsessed with physicality, with all things material. Because that's just a way, that whole passion of materialness is to allow you to have a mind to witness the ridiculousness of it. And enjoy that ridiculousness. It's beautiful. It's fun. It's stunning. But it's also mundane. Right? And what does mundane mean? Endurance. It's samsara. But don't obsess on that. That's what we do. That's what humans do. Totally obsess on that. So, when he says, just one suchness in this emptiness they are, he's talking about the Buddha mind and how things are empty of affect. Because they're never truly instantiated of anything permanent. They're just a temporary condition of tendencies. Right? Of a suchness. Of a way of being, which is ephemeral, truly. It's a judgment we're making with our mind, which is loaded with karma and opinions and perceptive filters and all of that. It's just, it's a suchness. It's just, look at how that little wave has just crested over that babbling brook and then it's gone. And it made a noise. And it, that's wonderful. It's great to watch how that works, how that plays. Look, I can even take this samsaric hand with skin and flesh and stick it in that water and feel waterness, the suchness of water, wetness, cool, all those things. But it doesn't affect me. Because me is just like the water. I'm just a moment of perception. So even me doesn't affect my Buddha mind. With that kind of a barrier, with that kind of distance, space, time, separate. I become an observer rather than being enraptured in it, right? Affected by every little thing. That of an arhat, a single Buddha, a Buddha fully enlightened. Why a single Buddha and then a Buddha fully enlightened? They are struggling at that time with these arhats, the early teachings, with their idea that once a person develops their mind enough to understand what this teaching's about, they suddenly reach the pinnacle, and they haven't. They think they have, but they haven't. So there's something distinct from an arhat, a single Buddha. They're walking away from that term as an ultimate being. And they're understanding that a single Buddha is someone with knowledge beyond an arhat who is an exemplar and travels through society, what we are going to call a bodhisattva. And then a Buddha fully enlightened. Well, now, a fully enlightened person is a bodhisattva who courses in the Buddha way. But you don't become a bodhisattva and instantly attain Buddhahood. You understand Buddhahood. You may attain it from time to time. Your goal is to attain it more and more and hang on to it more and more, just as you and I are doing as we chant our Daimoku and focus our minds on our Buddha-ness. And the longer, the more we practice, the more we understand our practice, the more we see when it slips away, when it can slip away, how we can keep it from slipping away, return to it, jockeying back and forth. That's our bodhisattva path. Right? So they're saying, and so he takes not his stand on the fruit on which he won. In other words, the efforts that we make in samsara, all well and good. I accomplished writing a book. I accomplished getting online. I accomplished many things in maths, in martial arts, in numerous different kinds of employment. But those things are not me. I mean, it seems obvious to us to say that because we, in this era, have the capacity to get that. You have to realize that human beings haven't been on this planet that long. And we've gone from wandering animals to herding and nomadic, and herding is later, and then agrarian. And we very much were what we did. And we still hear that rhetoric used today. You are your job. How pathetic is that, right? We now can say that. 2,000 years ago, you wouldn't say that. You see why now teaching is different, practice is different. Then it was quite an act of enlightenment to say, no, I am not what I do as a job, as an accomplishment. There is only one real accomplishment, and it's the accomplishment of the mind, of enlightenment, of awakening. That accomplishment allows you to detach from all that stresses and creates anxiety. That is truly an accomplishment, right? The leader himself was not stationed in the realm which is free from conditions, nor in the things which are under conditions, but freely he wandered without a home. Just so, without a support or a basis, a bodhisattva is standing. A position devoid of a basis has that position been called by the jinna. So this is the three stanzas of the verse where bodhisattvas stand. So again, reinstantiating the idea that being is an observance of the being, not the being itself. Word salad, right? I'm really struggling with trying to explain what this means. I think you get it, though. The idea that you're a witness of life and all its tendencies in particular conditions that you are observing it at this moment, in this space and time, in this locale, is a non-geographic thing. It is a mental awareness to be celebrated, to be filled by as the observer of everything from the mind down. That it is all an experience to be appreciated, a suchness, a group of thousands of suchnesses for which you are no more responsible than you are a victim of. And yet, in that distinction, in that detachment, being in samsara as a bodhisattva with the Buddha mind also develops a tremendous affinity. Right? As entertaining as all the monkeys might be, one wants the monkeys to be happy. The monkey that keeps hitting himself on the head because he doesn't understand, you don't need to do that. Right? Not stop doing that. That's attached. But how can I lead that monkey to stop hitting itself on the head? It's not a happy thing. Compassion. Do you see? All right. We've just gotten through lines 35 to 37. So that's chapter 2. And we'll see how far we get this week. Maybe at some point I'll jump through this. Because... to stop and take this apart at every stanza is going to take some time. And I want us to bounce around different earlier teachings so you can make the link between this is on the path toward and Lotus Sutra is it. It is the immediate instantiation of that mind that we then carry with us as bodhisattva by definition, because we want to instantiate that mind and carry it with us, we are bodhisattva. Are we not? All right. Yeah, that's, I don't like to go beyond the hour territory. So we will, I need to mark this book. Anyway, I will do that after I sign off. Thank you so much for being here. I love you guys. You guys are courageous and amazing. Keep your practice strong. It's there. Your Buddha mind is there. You know it's there. You've already felt it, experienced it. That's what this practice is about. It's not about wishing for new shoes or making Aunt Sally better. New shoes, whatever they are, Aunt Sally's conditions, whatever they are, they will all improve when you see them as suchnesses of life. And that by elevating your daily life to be through your Buddha mind as a bodhisattva, you will affect your environment. You will get whatever you need of your environment without having to chase after it, desire it. You will get what you need because you will simply be a Buddha mind navigating samsara with your bodhisattva body. And whatever that needs, it will be supported. Have that confidence. With that confidence, you will more and more carry your Buddha mind. I promise you, that is the practice, that is the teachings, thousands of years worth of teachings, all trying to get us to understand that simple point. It's hard. It's hard to build that confidence until you start to experience it. And then that confidence builds. And I sit here before you, completely grateful of how true that is for my own life. Well, I don't want to make this a testimonial. So anyway, please enjoy your practice. Stay healthy. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. We're all just suchnesses, right? Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. I'll see you again soon.